and I thought it was because I needed more from him than friendship. But that was never true. He turns toward me. Dory and I were friends first, I guess. But I don't think I could ever be just friends with Dory, even though that part of what we are is essential. I've wanted her almost from the beginning, and being with her only makes me want her more. It would kill me to be around her and never touch her. Maybe you'd reached that point with Graham. I shake my head. See, that's the stupid part. I hadn't. I convinced myself of that, but it was a lie. You and Dory, you've begun a relationship. Friendship would only be a step back that you don't want to make. But Graham never felt that way about me. Never. We were best friends for 4 years, Reed. Tears spill down my face. I threw away the closest relationship of my entire life, aside from Catherine, on a gamble to get something he'd made it very clear he never wanted. Reed slides his arms around me and pulls me to his chest. I haven't cried about Graham in months. Instead, I've made myself endure that deep burn in my chest, the one that reminds me what I did, without giving myself the release of tears. I called Graham about the adoption. Reed starts and looks down at me, surprised. I take a shuddering breath. I knew River's caseworker was going to call him, and I was afraid of what he might say to her. He told me I couldn't use River to fill my need for affection. Pulling away, I grab a tissue and look back at Reed, whose shirt is wet with my tears. Reed, River lost the only parents he's ever known. And he's understandably attached to Wendy, which will be another loss. If we do this, we can't back out. I take his hand and stare into his eyes. Please don't do this if you can't be there for him. If you're going to start a new family someday and leave him behind, he doesn't need any more hollow places. Staring down at our hands, he says, I've thought for years that my father wasn't there for me. But he was. He was present. Even if he didn't get me at all most of the time. Even if he didn't pay as much attention as he should have. Returning his gaze to mine, he says, I'll be present, Brooke. I don't want to make promises I can't live up to, but I'll try my best to be more than present. Just promise me that if I fuck up, you'll call me on it. And you'll give me the chance to make it right. I nod. Okay. Reed twitches his hair back and opens a palm. So, does every girl I know have to turn insightful all at once? I mean, hell, I know I'm shallow, but Jesus, you'd think somebody would be content to remain superficial just to keep me company. The weight leaves the conversation and I've unburdened myself to Reed. Without being demeaned for it, his wisecrack allows me to swim back to a place where my feet can touch bottom. Like John?
Oh, right, he laughs. I forgot about John. Dude, I'm so covered.
Reed. When Dory didn't answer texts or calls yesterday, I didn't freak out. She had classes all day, including that statistics exam she was worried about. It was her birthday, though, and I didn't get to talk to her. I told myself that her friends probably took her out to celebrate, even if it would have taken her 30 seconds to return a text. Now it's Tuesday. She's still not replied, and every passing hour makes it harder to pass off her radio silence as the demanding life of a college student or a dead phone battery. I wonder if she's okay. I wonder if her parents would even try to call me if she wasn't. And then I wonder if I should call them. I try to remember her friends' names. Kayla something, Amy something, Shema something. I'm not cool with the direction my thoughts are taking because I don't do clingy or needy or dependent or possessive. I've spent most of the day with Brooke, first at her attorney's office with Dad, and now at Catherine's house making a scrapbook about us for River. After printing out photos of ourselves and parts of L.A., hiking trails, parks, his bedroom to be at each of our respective places, we glue-stick them onto the pages, like kindergartners. So, how do we plan to explain our relationship to him, since we're planning to move him from the one home he knows into two he doesn't know at all? Two parents who are already separated. That might be confusing. Brooke chews one side of her lip, thinking. Well, we need to convince him that we're friends, that we aren't going to drag him into a tug-of-war. All our self-portraits are separate. Are there any photos in existence of the two of us together? Happy? But not, you know, happy-happy. Maybe something taken during school pride. Glancing at my dubious expression, she waves a hand. Yeah, never mind. We pretty much loathed each other for the duration of that whole thing. After today's revelations, I feel even worse about how I treated Brooke then. Seriously, having a conscience is ass. The only friendly one I know of is from 5 years ago, the one that got printed along with the pics of us at LAX a couple of weeks ago, along with all the theories about why we were flying together. She rolls her eyes. Right? Because nothing coincidental ever happens to celebrities. She thumps herself in the forehead and grabs her phone. Durr. Let's just take one now. Lean in. We lean our heads together and smile, and she takes two or three shots. After we choose one and she sends it to her laptop, I say, you know what the media is going to do with this story, right? River? Us? Sighing, she nods. I'm not sure what slant they'll take, but they'll probably either try to make us into a prepackaged little family or we'll be the new young Hollywood poster children for teen irresponsibility. Like having a child is comparable to being jailed and rehabbed nonstop for a coke addiction. I wouldn't care what they say about me. That's new. She shrugs. I just don't want River getting hurt because of it, especially the whole illegitimate thing. So, I was thinking about giving Rowena an exclusive for the first photos of River. What? No. Why would you even consider letting one of those vultures take photos of him? Because, come on, Reed, be realistic. They're going to take photos of him. This is a huge story, and Hollywood babies are stalked hard. If we have Rowena do them, we diffuse some of the demand for him and control how he's presented to the general public. I grimace. Alarmingly, that makes some sense. Of course it does. Look, he's four. If we can manage the way his story is told now, it will become the accepted account of his life. Once he's old enough to realize we're his real parents, it won't be a big deal.
Except when he figures out that you and I were happy-happy at least once, which should absolutely be our secret code word for sex.
I flutter my lashes and affect a feminine voice. Reed, since you have River this weekend, I'm going to Happy Happy, my new personal trainer. Shut up. She punches me in the arm just hard enough to bruise. I don't do people who work for me. Gross. And trust me, you've been getting a lot more Happy Happy than I have recently.
Jealous?
She tries to punch me again, and I block her and laugh. Didn't you say you decided to do the season finale of Life's a Beach, along with that brainless beefcake you were involved with? What's his name? Xavier or something or other? I'm sure he'd be game for a little happy-happy. Hiding her face, she laughs. Oh, we were involved all of once. He was all pretty and no skill.
Unlike yours truly.
Grinning wickedly, I waggle my brows and she rolls her eyes. Christ, your ego always was ginormous. Unbelievably, it appears to have grown. How does your new girlfriend handle that thing? Or is that what you like about her being an ordinary girl, ass over elbows because hot superstar Reed Alexander is paying attention to her?
I feel like she's just poked my good mood with a pin. Dory's not like that.
Oh?
She's never been awestruck by me or impressed by the whole celebrity thing, whether I wanted her to or not. She doesn't think of me like that.
She arches a brow. So you say. But you can't escape who you are, Reed. And neither can she.
And with those words, Brooke verbalizes exactly what I'm worried about. The odd solidarity building between us today served as somewhat of a distraction from my uneasiness concerning Dory. But that's all it was. A distraction. I'm gonna step outside and call her. I say. But of course, Dory doesn't answer. I disconnect when it rolls to voicemail, and then send her another text, in which I try to sound like I'm not about to lose it because she hasn't answered me since she got out of my car 48 hours ago.
Chapter 22. Dory. Read. You never told me how you did on the exam. Everything okay? Depressed to be the ripe old age of 19? I stare at Reed's last text again, and I know I have to answer him. He's in Austin with the mother of his child, who I didn't know existed until 2 days ago. All Sunday evening I thought about what he said. How he hadn't known the baby was his. That he didn't know how to tell me. I inferred from these words that he didn't want to tell me at all, and I should be angry or tolerant or hurt over the lie. I am all those things. But over his child's existence, not over the fact that he didn't tell me. Once I got over the shock of it, I can see why he didn't want to tell me. Because he feared I'd react like this. Maybe he even knew I would. It's been hours since that last text, but when I answer it, he replies immediately. Me. I survived the exam. 19 is a weird age to be. I think I should feel older or younger. I can't decide. Reed. I'll give you a heads up on 20 in 3.5 weeks. I suspect it may be more of the same. Me. At least it will be a different decade. Observable progress. Reed.
True.
Reed.
We met with Brooke's attorney and caseworker. They're going to try to make this as simple as possible so the process isn't extended, thanks to me joining it.
Reed.
Can I call you now? Or tomorrow night when I'm home?
Me. I've got a study group in a few minutes and a guest lecturer symposium tomorrow.
Reed. Okay. I'm heading to Utah on Thursday morning to start shooting scenes there, but I'll text you.
A few photos of our night out in San Francisco made it onto the gossip sites. It took a couple of days for anyone to identify me, and even still there are skeptics. Because in that blue dress and heels and Reed's shoulder partially blocking my face, I look nothing at all like that girl from Habitat. Nothing like an ordinary girl from L.A. The most vocal disbelievers think I'm someone minor from his last film, or the new one that begins shooting in a couple of days. According to rumors, taking a bed-to-bed sampling of the female cast members is customary for Reed Alexander. I've tried to get Kayla and Amy to stop sending me links to the photos and stories, but they're far too excited to know a celebrity like Reed. My mind drifts back a few months, to when we'd begun hanging out at his place, to the night I taunted him about having a popular novel with predominantly female fans on his bedside table. Brushing aside my snarky tone, he informed me he was up for the lead role in the film, as though this was no big deal. Deliberately, he gave me that lazy smile and asked if I thought he could bring him to life on the big screen. He knew exactly what those words would do once unleashed in my imagination. Before I could hide my astonishment, he teased me by guessing that I was one of those brainy girls who only got in trouble for reading past lights out. I was. Before I left that night, he'd kissed me a lot, while a tiny sliver of my mind's eye was unable to stop picturing him as that brooding character I knew too well. Thus began the weeks of what we termed being reckless. And I worry that, from my viewpoint at least, that word defines our entire relationship. Reed lives his life in a reckless way, and ever since his life collided with mine last summer, I've been unbalanced. The trajectory of my safe, small orbit cannot contain him. And no amount of wishing will change that. He told me on Sunday that once news of River breaks, it will be a circus. I'm not sure what he means, not entirely. But I have a better idea than most. The truth will only be what the truth looks to be, not what it is. The media will toss out possibilities, and fans will gobble them down, making up their own storylines. They'll want to see Reed and his beautiful ex back together, saving their son from the horrors of drug addicts and foster care, and they won't want a plain Jane nobody interloper in the mix. Claudia drives Raul, Afton, and me to Zachary's Pizza to brainstorm ideas for our group project. Afton and I don't own a car, And Raoul's tiny, ill-maintained Fiat seats too, and is forever running on fumes. He and Claudia argued about this all the way here and are still at it. You never drive. Even that one time it was just the two of us. Raoul peruses the menu, his eyebrows arched defensively toward his black spiked hair. So I'd rather bum rides or take Bart everywhere and have a social life than buy gas for my little death trap. Sue me.
Bum is right, Claudia murmurs.
You do know pizza can be delivered. We didn't have to show up in person, he says. Not from Zachary's. And other places are so not the same.
Vraiment,
Afton interjects in French, though by the looks they give each other, neither of them speak it. This place is the best. Now stop fighting, you two. God. She punctuates this edict with a pout, which ruins the stern mother effect. Gesturing at her with his menu, Raoul objects. We're not fighting. We're sparring. It's what we do. If you don't like it, turn away. He makes a move-along motion with his free hand. Afton rolls her eyes.
I vote thin crust spinach and mushroom.
Raoul is horrified. No way! I'm a man. I need meat and I want it stuffed. That's what he said, Claudia mumbles. Before Raoul can return fire, I notice one of the girls from my building who saw me with Reed the night he stayed in my dorm. One of the girls on the receiving end of that spontaneous wink of his. She is sitting at an adjacent table with several other girls, and they're all leaning their heads together and staring at me.
Uh-oh, Claudia tells me quietly. I think your cover is blown.
What cover? What's going on? Afton is wide-eyed and speaking in a whisper that can be heard two tables away.
Why are we whispering?
Raoul asks, whispering just as loudly. Can we go somewhere else? I ask. And they all look at me like I'm insane. There's a mob of people waiting for tables, and we've got one. A waiter appears as though Raoul's growling stomach conjured him.
What can I get for you guys tonight?
As Raoul and Afton order, Claudia scoots her chair a bit, blocking me from maybe two people at the table of six.
Just ignore them.
Ignore them, right. I rearrange my silverware, all too aware that they've pulled out cell phones now and are taking pictures of me. When I was with Reed Saturday night, and he guided me into the restaurant with one arm around my waist, the paparazzi flashes were different. The photos were of him, and I was merely with him. Here, I'm alone, ordering dinner with friends, living my average girl life. Except for the whole strangers photographing me part.
Why is that gaggle of sororstitutes taking our picture?
Raoul asks when the waiter leaves. Claudia sputters,
Don't call them that, you sexist!
Have you seen the parade of them through my dorm room? No, you have not. One of Raoul's roommates is a total man-whore and is beyond skilled, according to Raoul, at locating and successfully propositioning every willing girl on campus. I can sleep through just about anything now, a condition which makes me sad for my lost innocence. Claudia barks a laugh.
Oh, please! If you're innocent, I'm the Dalai Lama.
Namaste, he returns.
Excuse me.
Oh, no. Elevator girl. Holding a magazine, folded open to a page splashed with photographs of various celebrities, everywhere from fashion shows to deli counters to poolside. Right in the center, Reed in his gray suit and blue tie, and me, semi-obscured by Reed's body in the blue dress.
This is you, isn't it? And when Geneva and I saw you in the elevator, that was him, wasn't it? I mean, I can understand why you'd want to keep it on the down low, but come on.
I cross my fingers under the table. We're friends. I don't even know why I'm lying. I hate lying. She arches an eyebrow.
So, what's he doing with Brooke Cameron? I mean, you said the guy you were with was your boyfriend before when we asked.
Darn her memory.
He just didn't want to be recognized. Because he didn't want it getting back to her that he was spending nights with you?
My jaw falls open. Luckily, Claudia says, Hey, look, we're trying to have a study group session here.
She says they're friends, and she has no comment on what's her name. And please, tell your friends that taking pictures of people they don't know is rude. Ta-ta and bye-bye. The girl turns on her heel and shoots back to the table where all six heads are conferring. Fudge, I say. By Wednesday evening, there's an indistinct photo of Reed and Brooke Cameron outside a courthouse in downtown Austin on Tuesday morning. That's when the speculation starts in earnest. The photos of them in the airport and on the plane, each reading something, not touching and not speaking to each other, all of a sudden look like a lover's spat. That girl in San Francisco must be the cause of it, one site speculates. Brooke must have gone home to Texas, upset, and he followed her. But what are they doing at a courthouse? Everyone has an opinion. And of course, neither of them can be reached for comment. Reed, why aren't you answering my texts or calls?
Reed, every time I get a text, I think maybe it's from Dory, but it's not. This morning, Mom texted photos of the renovations in my old room. She and Dad set up home study appointments, and we've all filled out questionnaires that are every bit as intrusive as Brooke warned me they'd be. Mom is somehow happy about River, which floors me, but doesn't seem to stun Dad, who says he knew it would go one of two ways. He told her, she cried, and then she called to tell me she was proud of me. She's only said that to me once before. The day I beat up a kid at school who'd lifted a girl's skirt in front of everyone on the playground and thought it was funny, until I busted his lip open. We both got suspended, though our exclusive private school had a zero tolerance for violence policy. Funny how zero tolerance turns into we're tolerating it just this once when affluent parents throw money at the problem. That was 10 years ago. I just got a text from Emma, who I've only talked to twice since the Vancouver Film Festival last fall. Getting a text from her is out of the blue. Emma, Dad called to tell me I'd gotten a call from a caseworker in Texas, and I assumed it was about Brooke. But it was about you? Me. Ah, that was fast. Emma. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Me. We're asking for joint custody. Emma. Hold on. I must be hallucinating. I read that you two have been seeing each other, which I thought could not be for real. But you and Brooke, joint custody? Can you talk? Me. Sure, I've got a few minutes. I see you've been reading the gossip sites, I answer in place of hello, grabbing a bottle of water from the craft services trailer and moving away from the current scene being shot. I'm in full costume and makeup, including a couple of authentic-looking blades, one tucked into a holster on my belt and another in my boot. But I've got 15 or 20 minutes until I'm up.
Reed, you know I'm not allowed to read those. Emily reads them. I'm shown links or given summarized news on a need-to-know basis only.
Still? I guess now she's protecting you from the legions of gram stalkers, eh? She growls and I can't help but laugh. Well, you can tell Emily that hearsay concerning Brooks and my rekindled relationship is baseless. I'm with Dory. Not that she's talking to me.
And the joint custody thing you just so casually mentioned?
Yeah, that's a thing. Not a thing that's out yet, but it will be. Soon. She sighs.
Reed, you know that once that's out, it's going to underscore the perception that you and Brooke are together, and the media will push that angle full throttle. I don't know your girlfriend, but if it was me, I'd be really bothered. You need to talk to her.
I know that, but she's not answering my calls or texts. Her parents hate me. I don't actually know any of her friends. I'm going to try to make a quick trip to Berkeley on Saturday, but right now I'm stuck on location in the middle of a fucking canyon in fucking Utah. I release a snarl of complete frustration and stop just short of running my hand through my perfectly styled set hair.
And why am I talking to you about this? Because I'm nosy?
I laugh and heave a sigh.
I know I'm not a regular girl compared to Dory, especially since I'll be banking on my previous film career to help me land Broadway auditions. But I do know how it feels to watch my movie star boyfriend be publicly salivated over by thousands of girls, to have him constantly rumored to be hooking up with other people. It's hard to take sometimes. even if I know it's total rubbish. And I trust Graham, more than I've ever trusted anyone.
Her words are like a physical blow.
You think Dory doesn't trust me? I didn't say that. Maybe she's feeling insecure. No one wants to admit to that. Insecurity makes you feel weak and powerless, and that's no way to have a healthy relationship. I would know. I was never more miserable.
But she's not the insecure type. She's like the opposite of insecure. It definitely feels like she doesn't trust me. But why should she? I fucked up not telling her about River. Just like I didn't tell you. She sighs.
You know, I've told you before. What happened between you and Brooke before me wasn't my business. I'd have gotten over the shock of that if it hadn't been for, you know, the parade of girls right after.
I shut my eyes.
Ugh, Emma. Never mind that. I'm long past it. Here's the thing. Graham and I share past stuff. We talk about relevant personal history, but only stuff that impacts our relationship. Neither of us needs to know or confess every single thing that happened before we met. Once you decided to become involved with River, that's when it was time to tell her. And it sounds like you did, eventually. Now she's just got to work it out in her own head. Maybe she needs time. Maybe she doesn't want to be in a stepmother position at her age. And if that's the case, you're going to have to make a choice between her and River.
I feel like she's just unloaded a ton of bricks on top of me, and I can barely breathe, because what she just said is true. It's so fucking true. Emma would know what it takes to make that choice, to accept a child who doesn't belong to you, right in the middle of your relationship, like a ghost of some former love. God damn it if my initial reflex isn't to back away from this child. Who I don't know at all, if that's what it would take to keep Dory. But what kind of man would that make me? The PA calls out to let me know I'll be up in 10 minutes. I hold up a hand and nod at him. Fuck, how can I shoot a battle scene now when I feel crushed into dust? I need every second of that 10 minutes to get my game face back on. I've got to go. Thanks, Emma.
I'm sorry, Reed. I know I didn't make you feel any better.
No, I laughed softly once. But you told me what I needed to hear. I'll look you guys up when I'm filming in New York. Brooke, call me when you get this. Me, filming, can't call. What? Brooke, we're getting a pre-placement visitation. We may get him early. His foster mother had some kind of health thing come up, possible surgery, and they don't want to bounce him into a new foster home and then to us not long after. Me, shit, when? Brooke, Saturday. Can you be here? They need to see both of us interact with him. Are you doing the online parenting course? Me. Yes and yes. I'll figure something out. Call you later. Me. We're getting a visit with River Saturday morning, so I can't come to Berkeley this weekend. I have to fly in and out Friday, Saturday. So sorry. Me. Dory. Answer me, please. Dory, that's okay. Shema and I are helping with a free laundry thing for local homeless people on Saturday anyway. I was going to text you. Me, were you? Me, if I call you tonight, will you answer? Me, I miss you. Dory, I miss you too.
Hello.
I didn't realize how much I expected to get dumped into her voicemail again, until I don't. How much I miss the sound of her hello until I hear her say it. Hey, you answered. Right behind the relief is anger. I didn't expect that either, and I start my silent, therapeutic counting, hoping to head it off. But it doesn't work that way. The aggravation is filling me as fast as I'm emptying it. Like a rainy day in a water-laden rowboat, with nothing to bail it out but a tin can.
I'm sorry I've been so busy,
she says, and I'm literally clamping my jaw shut on the words that want out. I breathe through my nose and count. 1, 2, 3.
until I could trust myself to speak. Can we talk, please? Are you still upset?
I'm not upset, Reed. I just don't think we should rush into anything.
What do you mean by that, rush into anything? By anything, do you mean us?
Dory, is this about River? No. Maybe. It's not about him specifically. You've got a lot going on with the movie and River and Brooke.
Dory, the stuff about Brooke and me and the tabloids is all speculation or make-believe. You remember all the fabricated crap they printed when you fell on me last summer? That we were having a secret relationship?
We did have a secret relationship, but we weren't having one then. That's your argument?
Well, yes. I didn't say that they don't guess right sometimes, and do I need an argument? She doesn't answer. The silence is thick and solid. I want to reach through this phone and pull her to me.
Dory! You shouldn't have to explain yourself, Reed. You're right. I just want you to be free to do what you need to do.
And I'm not? I'm not free to do what I need to do? Silence again. I'm arguing her into corners because that's what I do. But if she goes mute on me, what good does it do me to be right? So I retreat to what I know, how I've been raised to handle conflict. It's simple, really. If the communication is making everything worse, then we'll just stop talking about it. Your spring break is in 3 weeks, right? We'll be done filming in Utah by then. I'll have some long work days at Universal, but at least we'll both be in L.A. We'll spend as much time together as possible. Everything will be fine. I promise. Without thinking, I ask, do you trust me? As though this question isn't at the core of everything, and I haven't just circled back around to it, as unintentional as it was.
You're doing the right thing, Reed, and I'm proud of you for it.
That's the second time I've heard that sentiment in as many days, but this one feels like the prelude to something unwanted.
Spring recess is in 3 weeks, yes.
Everything is off. The cadence of her voice isn't quite right. It's flat, stilted. But I can't see how to fix this. Plus, she didn't answer my question.
I'll call you after we meet him.
For the beat of several seconds, I think she's not going to answer. Maybe she's already gone. And then she says,
sure, that would be fine.
Chapter 23. Brooke. I've just gotten off the phone with Janelle, who is begging me for the zillionth time and all that is holy not to turn down Paper Oceans. She's had her first call from the producer and is freaking out that I'll say no to it. Attempting to explain my reasons does no good. I'm done talking about this until you've got an offer on the table, I said, thoroughly irked. What I left unsaid, but she managed to hear anyway. And then I'll turn it down. When the phone rings, I assume she's calling back with additional declarations of the many ways in which I am about to ruin my career. But the number on the display is unfamiliar and begins with 512. Local. My hand shakes as I jab talk and say, "This is Brooke," in the most confident voice I can muster.
"Miss Cameron. Hello, this is Wendy Long. I'm River's foster mother."
My fist clenched to calm the shaking. I strive to maintain my feigned composure. I know this woman has voiced concerns to River's caseworker, his ad litem, and the judge about me adopting him, though I'm not sure exactly what was said. Norman keeps reminding me that she's just looking out for his best interests, but I can't help feeling personally affronted. I've got to do whatever it takes to mask that feeling. "Yes, Wendy, good evening." Shit. I automatically used her first name, something I do to even the playing field in adversarial confrontations. Awesome. I thump myself in the forehead with that clenched fist. "Please call me Brooke."
"Oh, certainly, Brooke."
Her drawl is heavy, words fading into soft endings, fusing and linking together, mirroring my mother's dialect. My brain screams, hick, and I struggle not to assign that personal bias to it.
"I thought we should have a chat about River before tomorrow's visit. Is Mr. Alexander going to be accompanying you? Is this a good time to talk?"
"Yes, it's fine. Reed will be in town this evening, and I'll pick him up on my way over in the morning.
All right. Well, about River, there are a few important things you should know about him before you meet.
Okay.
First off, and most importantly, he doesn't talk.
Everything I know about children, I've learned in the past few weeks. I may not know much, but I know that most four-year-olds are language proficient and can supposedly talk your ear off. Catherine says four is the age of why.
Kylie was more of a quietly observant child, oddly enough, she said. But oh my lord, Kelly asked why a million times a day. Why do apples come in so many colors? Why did the dog eat that? Why do teeth fall out? Why can't I jump off the roof into the pool? The house always seemed unnaturally silent the moment she fell asleep.
What do you mean exactly? I asked Wendy.
I mean he doesn't say words. He doesn't communicate by speaking.
At all? Ever?
At all. Ever.
She confirms. Is he developmentally challenged from what happened to him? I bite my lip and taste blood, cursing his adoptive mother to hell again.
I don't believe so. He understands what's said to him just fine, and he'll nod or shake his head so you get your basic yes or no responses. And most notably, I've heard him verbalize words and short sentences in his sleep a few times, usually during nightmares, so he can talk. He just won't. It's possible that he doesn't even know he can.
I frown. What's been done to address that?
He sees a therapist every week, and his social worker every month.
What good does a therapist do if he can't or won't speak?
He has River draw pictures about his feelings. He's real good at that. He's smart, and he's a good little artist.
I hear the affection lacing her words and almost lose it.
He's just had a rough time of it.
Yes, he has. I intend to end that, Miss Long, I promise you.
Please call me Wendy, and I want to believe you, Miss Brooke. But the stories in the tabloids about you and Mr. Alexander both. Well, I'm worried. I'm sure the gossip is played up and all to sell papers. I mean, I seen one last week that said a lady gave birth to a 30-pound baby, and I'm here to tell you that's just not possible.
Well, don't get me wrong. You two are both young and nice-looking, and I don't mean to pass judgment on you for your lifestyles, whatever they are. It's not my place to say, you understand. Except where River is concerned. He's not.
She swallows audibly. He's not a knick-knack or a pet. He's been hurt, and all the pretty clothes and new toys in the world aren't going to fix him. He's like a little flower bud that just won't open up, and to be perfectly frank, with what he's seen, I don't know if he ever will.
Tears stream down my face and clog my throat.
Thank you for your honesty, Wendy. Now let me give you mine.
My voice is earnest, pleading. Such a foreign effort for me, but I need her to believe me. I don't know anything about raising a child except how not to do it. I know he needs a home. He needs love. And I mean to give him those things. I take a shuddering breath. If he never wants to speak, then I'll just have to get really good at artistic interpretation. He can draw on the damn walls if he needs to.
Reed slides into the passenger seat of Glenn's King Cab pickup wearing his sunglasses and a Cal baseball cap, an open plaid shirt over a white t-shirt, jeans, and boat shoes. He looks like a cute college boy, not a Hollywood sex symbol.
Brooke Cameron. Sporting Western boots one day and driving an F-250 the next. Will wonders never cease? What's next, a 10-gallon hat?
I flip him off, but he just arches a brow and smirks.
Aw, come on, I was just funnin'.
His drawl is all kinds of exaggerated.
No need to get hostile.
I roll my eyes behind my own mirrored sunglasses and pull into traffic as soon as he's buckled up. There's more hostility where that came from, Reed Alexander. Like slipping into a broken-in pair of boots, I affect the accent he professes to love. You just keep that smart mouth shut or you'll be meeting your son sporting a fat lip. Luckily, he grins that full wattage smile and shakes his head without any more flippant commentary. Cocky son of a bitch. As we leave downtown and head south on I-35, he turns the alt-rock station down and asks, "You nervous?" I sigh. "Hell yes. You?"
"I've never felt so panicked about meeting anyone in my entire life."
Nodding in agreement, I say, "That pretty much sums it up."
"How long will this visit last?"
Wendy said about an hour, unless River makes it clear he's done, and then it would be best to leave. We don't want to make him uncomfortable. When I tell Reed what I learned from Wendy yesterday concerning River's muteness, his periodic nightmares, and some of the details about his adoptive parents, he mutters, "Shit," and stares out the passenger window for several minutes. 2 years ago, River's adoptive father died in a tragic car accident. I vaguely recall him, out of all the prospective adoptive parents Catherine and I sifted through that summer. Blonde, handsome, mid-30s, financially sound. What I remember best is something he wrote at the end of his prospective adoptive parent statement. "I hope to be the same loving, wonderful father to my child that my dad was to me." That sentence was the tipping point for my choice of them over another couple. His father is deceased. His mother is in her 70s and living in a retirement home. River's adoptive mother had been estranged from her parents for years, and they were unwilling to consider caring for River, whom they didn't regard as a grandchild. Soon after her husband's death, she'd sunk into an addiction she was unwilling or unable to abandon, even though it meant losing her child, a little boy who had no one else to depend on in the world. Except for me.
"What are we supposed to say to a kid who doesn't talk?"
Reed asks, finally, all hints of his earlier levity gone. "He can understand what we say. And I brought the life book. It's on the seat behind you." He turns to snatch the scrapbook we started when he was here earlier in the week, leafing through the pages as I spot the exit up ahead.
"This is great, Brooke," he murmurs.
When I was 6 or so, Catherine made me a scrapbook of my own. I was jealous of Kylie and Kelly having books of their baby photos and stories about their first few years of life.
"Your mom didn't make you one?"
he asks, and I glance at him like, "Really?"
"Guess that's not much of a surprise."
Sharla making a scrapbook? Definitely not. Catherine told me to bring a few photos the next time I came over. Over the next few weeks, I pocketed snapshots of myself that I found in drawers or boxes at home. There weren't many, even though I was basically an only child. Catherine bought a handmade journal at some craft fair, stuck glittery pink adhesive letters on the front that spelled out Brooke's book, and composed the story of me. I haven't thought of that thing in years. I'd forgotten about it until just now.
"Do you still have it?" "My mom's definitely not crafty, but she kept photo albums of my childhood, up until I was 10 anyway."
I bite my lip until it goes numb. "No, I don't have it. I made the mistake of taking it home. Sharla found it. She was furious, ripped the pages out, and tore up all the pictures."
"Holy shit, Brooke."
He stares at me.
"That's fucked up."
"Yeah, what a great role model for a mom, huh?" His hand clenches into a fist on the console between us.
"Your role model is Catherine, not Sharla. You know that, right?"
I did know that, somewhere in my head. I'd just never acknowledged it consciously. "Yeah, you're right." I turn down a street of analogous one-story homes, all of them small, each with a big front yard, a driveway on the right-hand side, and a cyclone fence. A few pecan trees and crepe myrtles dot the landscape here and there, but this flat stretch of acreage was probably reclaimed farmland when the subdivision was built, so there were no old oaks like those surrounding Catherine and Glenn's place.
"This is it,"
I whisper,
spotting the mailbox house number, which is surrounded by a hand-painted swirling heart motif. My heart thumps so hard that I feel each beat like someone is pounding on my chest from the inside, trying to escape. My hands grow cold, though it's a beautiful late winter day, the temperature in Austin within a degree or two of L.A. As we walk up the long, cracked sidewalk, I alternate between examining the chalked pictures and inscriptions decorating the concrete and staring at the quiet little house I recognize from the photo Bethany Shank brought to me not even 2 months ago. Reed, silent and following me, takes my hand as we reach the front door. He removes his sunglasses and I remove mine, and for a moment we stare at each other. I've never seen him look so resolute.
"Here we go,"
he says, pushing the doorbell. At the echo of chimes inside the house, my heart rate surges. Reed squeezes my hand and says,
"It's all good, Brooke. We can do this."
I can't let go of him. And then the door opens, and the middle-aged woman I recognize from the background of my only photo of River stands there, a faint smile wreathing her face. Her hazel eyes are clear and kind.
"Brooke Ann Reed, I presume?" she says, and we both nod.
She pulls her arm gently from behind her, her hand attached to a little boy who appears slowly on the right side of her hip. All I see are dark blue eyes, impossibly huge in his small face.
"This is River."
Dory. Shema has nudged me at least 10 times this morning. Whenever I'm not paying attention and someone asks me a question about operating the washers and dryers, how many tokens are allowed per person, or where the nearest public bathroom is located. After my last space out, she says, "Girl, where is your head this morning?" While my roommate is one of the few people with confirmed knowledge about Reed and me, I've never been a big fan of sharing too much information with anyone, even trusted friends. I love Amy and Kayla, but I'm pretty darn sure they've told every living soul at UCLA that they're friends with Reed Alexander's girlfriend. Shema knows we're going out, and that we met when I supervised him, or rather, tried to supervise him at Habitat. She also knows I don't publicize our relationship, so neither does she, which places her in a select class of friends. Occasionally, she surprises me with facetious questions like, "So, is Reed Alexander a good kisser?" Or, "I'll bet Reed Alexander is rawr in bed, isn't he?" I'm glad she hasn't yet discovered my glowing, telltale ears. The wide-eyed look on my face is indicative enough of my discomfiture, I'm sure. "How do you deal with all the making out your boyfriend does in those movies?" she asks now in her naturally discreet voice. Thank goodness. After handing a stack of washer-dryer tokens to a guy who, in all probability, hasn't washed any of his clothes in months. The smell makes my eyes water involuntarily until he shuffles over to a machine with an armful of grubby laundry and the small box of donated detergent I just handed him. I suspect he'll need more than the one box. "And the rumors with ex-girlfriends or not girlfriends, that alone would drive me batshit crazy. My mama, the self-proclaimed seer, is a practicing Cajun voodoo queen. She'd be happy to whip up a little gree-gree for you." At the word voodoo, I arch a brow. I'm afraid to ask what a gree-gree is. It's a protection amulet, sometimes for luck, but usually to ward off evil. I imagine ex-girlfriends qualify. Also, I figured you might not want to follow the still-practiced but ethically murky voodoo superstition to make a man stay faithful. Now I'm really afraid to ask. She leans closer and whispers, "You put a drop of your blood in his coffee." Ugh! I looked down at the latte in my hand, appalled. "Right?" she chuckles. "I overheard Mama telling my mama to do that to Daddy when I was little. And my ordinarily sane legal secretary mother was listening. I never asked her if she did it. If she did, it didn't work. If she didn't, well, who'd want to keep a guy that way anyhow?" "But using an amulet is A-okay?" I laugh. She shrugs and smiles. "That's the first time I've heard you laugh in a few days." When I pin my lips together and sigh, she says,
Amulets are about warding off bad stuff, not binding people to do things they may not otherwise do. But I'm with you. If and when I get a guy I'm interested in keeping around, I want him to stay because he wants to stay. Not because I poked a voodoo doll of him in the junk with a pin. During a show we were watching on Hulu last night, an ad for the MTV Movie Awards popped up, which is on next month. Reed and his School Pride co-star, Emma Pierce, have been nominated for Best Kiss. As the clip played, Shema gave me a sidelong glance but didn't say a word. An unwelcome mental image of the two of them reenacting the lip lock that made every girl I know swoon, Claudia accepted, at the upcoming awards show made me feel temporarily homicidal. Maybe I should tell Mama to make a gree-gree for Emma Pierce, Shema suggests now, and I suppress an actual growl, though supposedly she and Graham Douglas have been a legit couple for months. They went to the Vancouver Film Festival together last fall, and she popped up for a romantic weekend in Dublin a couple of months ago when he was filming there. They're spotted together all the time, alone or with friends, sometimes with his daughter, in particular near NYU, where they're rumored to be condo shopping. I narrow my eyes. You looked all of that up last night, didn't you? No, I looked it up this morning. Shrugging, she counts out tokens to a tired woman with two small children in tow, all three of them holding a basket of clothes, and I plop a trial-sized box of detergent in each of their baskets. You looked like you might go postal when that ad came on, is all. A little abnormal for such a peaceful girl, if you ask me. Rats. My non-existent poker face betrays me again.
Chapter 24. Reed. River doesn't speak a word during the visit, of course, but he seems curious enough that he doesn't signal an end to our stay. The first hour is spent under Wendy's supervision, and he never ranges far from her. Brooke and I sit side by side on the worn sofa, our legs wedged behind a coffee table that, while smelling of wood polish, has been crayoned and scratched and generally battered to hell. Propped next to his foster mother's chair, River leans his thin frame against her, as though her bodily support is necessary to his ability to remain upright. We made a book for River to keep. Well, Brooke made most of it. I remove the book from Brooke's lap and lean over the table to put it into Wendy's hands. River inclines closer, eyes a little wider and head angled to study the cover, which depicts a beach view of the western horizon over the Pacific at sunrise. It has some pictures of Los Angeles, where we live, parks and other cool places, and a few pics of us. I reach over and squeeze Brooke's cold hand as Wendy turns the pages, reading the descriptions to River, who doesn't take his eyes from the book until she's done. And then he reaches over, turns back to page one, and looks at her expectantly until she begins to read it again. Brooke clutches my hand as if she is hanging over a deep gorge, her eyes never moving from him. Handing him the book after the second read, Wendy says, "River, why don't you show Reed and Brooke your room? And put this with your other books." He eyes us for a moment before hugging the scrapbook to his chest and leading the way down a short, dim hallway and into a cramped bedroom that contains a set of bunk beds, one separate twin bed, a dresser, and a bookcase. There is no room for anything else. While we stand in the doorway, he walks to the single bed and slides the book beneath his pillow. The pillowcase is covered with cartoon depictions of cars and trucks in primary colors, and it occurs to me that here is a boy who would have loved My Yellow Lotus. Going to his knees on the tiny wedge of open carpet, he pulls a box from beneath his bed. I tug Brooke into the room by her elbow and urge her to sit down on the floor beside me. "What have you got there?" "Oh, Legos. They were my favorite thing in the world when I was your age. I wanted every set that came out." What I don't say, I got every set that came out, all stored somewhere in my parents' house, no doubt. The three of us are sitting on his bedroom floor building things when Wendy appears in the doorway and announces that it's time to wash up for lunch. I check my thick banded watch and am dazed to find we've spent nearly 2 hours here. My eyes meet Brooke's, and she nods, subtly. "Time to go." I clear my throat.
We should go get lunch, too.
River finishes snapping a plastic brick onto what appears to be a freelance spider the size of my hand that he's fashioned out of the black and gray rectangles. He's used two red squares for eyes, at least I think they're eyes, on a creature that only exists in nightmares for most little kids. With an intense blue gaze, full of his hesitation and all the reasons for it, he examines me and then Brooke, alternating between us. Brooke seems as guarded as River, and almost equally quiet. I have no idea what she's thinking. I can't read her. It's not like we're all that familiar with each other now, as weird as that is, considering the fact that we're attempting to adopt a child together. Thanks for letting us come play, bud. Still sitting cross-legged, I hold a fist toward him. Something I might do with John or any other guy under 25. He considers my knuckles, his pale brows drawing together, and for a moment I'm sure I've made a careless miscalculation. But after a quick glance at my face, he raises a very small fist and bumps mine lightly with it. And then he smiles. It's fleeting and subdued, but it's definitely a smile.
It was so nice.